Hello and welcome to The Roadmap, a technology law podcast recorded in London by Bristowe's. My name is Alice Essuola-Grant and I'm an associate in the commercial technology team at Bristowe's. I'll be your host for this episode and the next one, where we'll be taking a look at all things agile. In this episode, I'm joined by Vic Karana, a partner in Bristowe's commercial technology team. Today, Vic will briefly explain agile methodologies, why they're so commonly used to deliver projects, and some of the strategic issues to consider when deciding to use agile, whether that's internally or when working with third parties. Then, in the next episode, my colleagues Adrian Sim and Jamie Cox will do a deep dive on agile development projects and how to contract for them, what makes agile contracts different, the risks and issues to look out for, and how to negotiate a contract that enables agile while mitigating the risks agile poses. Vic, thanks for joining me today. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thanks, Alice. How are you?
I am very well, thank you. So let's dive straight in. What is agile? Why do we hear so much about it? And why are agile methodologies so commonly used on projects, both internally and when working with third parties?
Yeah, thanks for the question, Alice. And yeah, we thought we'd do this as a bit of a scene set, didn't we, before our colleagues then sort of get into the nitty-gritty of contracts.
Give people some background.
Yeah, and I think we could just put this into context a little bit, because yeah, this podcast and a lot of our work at Bristowe's is around digital transformation. And agile is a key methodology or series or different sets of methodologies that enable that kind of digital transformation, ways of working that enable businesses to think a bit differently, adopt new technologies and change how they operate and deliver products and services. So we expect lawyers and business people to encounter that term agile quite a lot these days, and it can be quite confusing about what we're actually talking about, because we'll all have clients and friends and colleagues of ours who work internally within a business. And a lot of those internal teams will work in an agile way. And what do we really mean by that? Well, there's lots of different flavors, but typically it could just be a team tasked with delivering a project that's just made up of people from different business functions. So you might, for example, for like some kind of regulatory compliance project, you might have a lawyer, a compliance person, an engineer who can code a tool, you know, a systems analyst who can capture business requirements, and they sort of come together to then implement that internally. Quite often when we use the term agile as kind of commercial contract lawyers, especially in the technology world, we're referring to, you know, specific types of development methodologies where there's many different flavors like Scrum and Kanban and SAFe, where going out to the market to appoint a supplier or a partner to help deliver an agile project is quite key. And what we mean there is, as distinct from more traditional development methodologies like waterfall, is both parties, customer and supplier, are really sort of coming together, drawing people from across their kind of operations to deliver collaboratively and jointly in an agile way. And, you know, really, agile methodologies are used because they're seen often as a way of reducing the risk of actually delivering the wrong scope or getting the project wrong. If you think about traditional waterfall projects, which you might have your requirements for that defined up front, and then you have like a build period, and, you know, that's all about the product meeting those requirements. If you think about that wider context again, digital transformation, those programs can often involve a lot of uncertainty, which can be quite deliberate because you might want to leverage emerging technology you don't fully understand yet. You might want to deliver something differently to your customers or even change how you run things internally. So you may not at the start of a project know where you might want to end up. So you could start higher level and use agile processes to iterate and collaborate over time to deliver that. And especially in a rapidly changing kind of business environment where, you know, demand from your customers is changing, your competitors are doing different things, you might want to make sure that you don't bake in obsolescence up front at the start of a project. And agile is one way to try and mitigate that. Another feature of agile is it kind of, to use a bit of tech parlance, it enables people to sort of ship working product more quickly. You could sort of go live with new features, say, of a new system, iteratively and, you know, in a modular way over time, rather than waiting to the end of a project and doing a big bang sort of go live for all of those features and functionality. And sort of another feature we sort of see is a lot of digital transformations, as we've talked about on this podcast, can involve kind of complex kind of interlocking parts. You've got legacy systems, multiple stakeholders, a whole regulatory overlay, lots of suppliers that can make them difficult to manage. Well, some agile ways of working can help mitigate those problems by saying, okay, well, we're just going to be nimble about the issues we see over time and have a process by which we can still sort of meet those requirements. So really, I think they're used by businesses, and we see them on deals all the time, a way of reducing getting the scope wrong because it's got that focus on iterative development, being nimble about changing requirements, constantly reappraising what's important and what's not. And then really, when done correctly, Agile can provide a means to managing, you know, a fast-paced change, but still retaining that kind of level of control and oversight a modern business needs.
So we can definitely see some of the benefits of Agile and why organizations might want to use Agile, you know, whether that's to get teams working together in a nimble way or in specifically in tech development contracts. But we know that when going out to the market on an Agile development project, it's potentially quite risky if it's not fully thought through. Taking a step back from contract, what are the more strategic considerations at the outset of a decision to source an Agile partner? In particular, I'm thinking here about the classic risks around uncertainty of outcome that's inherent in Agile when you compare it with more traditional development methodologies.
Yeah, it's a good question. Thanks. So I think the key really is having a strategy in which you can think through the different aspects of a decision to go with Agile, especially when you're going out to the market to source an Agile partner, and especially if it's kind of a mission critical sort of project. So, you know, asking, and this is where I think lawyers and other advisors have a big role, asking why are we using Agile for this project? All those benefits I sort of talked about with complex digital transformation or adopting new technology, that those could be ripe for Agile. But actually, you know, if you know what you need, you're doing a systems integration, for example, and you know that these systems need to talk to each other and data needs to be accessed, you may just know the technical requirements or be able to know them, in which case you may ask, well, why are we doing this Agile? If we know what we need, we can write them down and the scope of work and then contract for the certainty of that outcome. So challenging some of the selection of Agile can be important. And another area I think is important around this sort of strategy piece is what I'd call organizational preparedness. Some of the problems we've seen with Agile projects going wrong have actually been where the buy side kind of customer organization is not set up internally to play its role in Agile, because Agile is not the same as outsourcing, where you're shifting the responsibility for delivering a thing to another entity, really. So do you have the kind of internal empowered team freed up from their kind of business as usual work to fully engage and collaborate with a supplier partner? Is the right product and business owner involved so they can make decisions quite nimbly and quite quickly? Is the sort of governance internally set up to enable that? Like, if there's too many layers of approval or the team's not empowered, it's not really Agile. And in the actual delivery phase, that you can come a cropper because suppliers are ready to engage, you're taking sprint meetings, and there's been some recent case law where a project's gone wrong. And because the customer buy side people haven't played their role, the judges haven't looked too kindly on that. So thinking through whether as a particular team or as an organization, you're set up to deliver it, I think that's really important.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, something that we encounter a lot. It's that question of, is there the right culture in place internally? And I think that's a really important first step and first question. And then sort of moving to the external, how about how you select the partner that you sort of go with for this Agile deal or Agile project?
Yeah, it's a really key question, because, you know, I think we sort of spoke initially about Agile can be something you can do internally as a business. When we're talking about going to the market and working with a supplier or partner, you're talking about a different organization, a different culture. So using a procurement or bid phase exercise to tease out whether the market of potential partners you're talking to or your chosen supplier can actually work with you how you need them to is going to be key. I think too often we see RFPs or ITTs go out, which kind of talk about the business need or the outcome that's needed, but doesn't give enough information, A, about everything we know about what the users require of this system or this project, or don't ask enough questions that go to the potential supplier's ability to work collaboratively and iteratively. So I would sort of say, like, in RFPs, focus on asking about case studies where this supplier organization has helped and worked with a the customer internally and collaboratively in that sort of way. Ask to interview some of the key members of the team that you'll actually be working with on the ground, because you should be able to meet them in advance to work out culturally whether that's going to be sort of work. And also, I think sometimes people think with Agile, well, there's just no real background information available about where we want to end up. And in my experience, that's not often true. There's a lot of artifacts and documentation around Agile, which can be really important sources of information. So you've got typically in some sort of types of agile processes, you've got a product backlog potentially, or a product vision, which sets what the broader outcome is, a set of user stories, which you can have like fictional, made up, semi-factual, you know, people on the ground who need to use this product or system in the way they need to. I think communicating as much of that information as possible to the supplier community allows them to work out, you know, what their proposal looks like for their team, and to, you know, kind of make that meaningful.
Absolutely. And I guess it also speaks to your point about cultural alignment, whether or not you've kind of got the same idea and same vision when it comes to Agile, because obviously there are so many ways to deliver a project in an Agile way. Is what the customer is thinking is Agile the same as what the supplier is planning to deliver? Well, thanks, Rick, for that really helpful summary of some of the internal thinking that ideally should be happening before deciding to source an Agile development. As you've sort of noted, where we've seen things go wrong, it tends to boil down to the organization and them not really being ready to do Agile properly, or perhaps not having that alignment in terms of what Agile looks like for a specific project. As I mentioned, our colleagues Adrian and Jamie are going to explore some of the contractual issues surrounding Agile in the second part of this two-parter. In the meantime, do you have any thoughts on how organizations, having sort of taken a step back and made that thoughtful decision to use Agile for their next major development project, how they should approach the next step of engaging the market? And also, once they're into the delivery stage, how they might manage issues that could arise?
Yeah, I mean, on the contracting piece, you know, I'll leave a lot of that, as you say, to Adrian and Jamie to cover in the next episode. But the only thing I'll sort of say is, it's useful to maybe think about a shift in mindset when you come to the principles of approaching a contract negotiation. Because with Agile, I think it's worth conducting those discussions in the spirit to give effect to how Agile will work in practice. Because I think if we let the contract dictate its own rules on how an Agile process will run, well, the teams on the ground just won't follow it. So my guidance is often to like take time to understand how the Agile project teams on both sides are going to come together and decide to run this. Try to work that through into the contract and then build some sort of contractual parameters and risk management provisions around that process. Because, and you know, some vendors may, you know, not like thank me for sort of mentioning it, but there are sort of tools and mechanisms that are already inherent in the Agile process that can be kind of oriented towards dealing with risk management. So a few examples. So on some types of Agile processes, you may have what's called a product vision, a high level view of what the purpose or objective of this project's all about. Like, there's a parallel there with sort of outcomes-based contracting, yeah, which we're more familiar with. So could you take that and say, okay, well, what does completion of this Agile project look like? It's got to deliver that product vision, which is, you know, a proxy for sort of the outcome we're trying to achieve as a business, and have a hook in the contract around that to incentivize meeting that. Another example is what's known as velocity, which is a way to measure the completion rate of backlog items over each sprint. You know, could you think of that as a proxy for more traditional kind of late delivery or lack of momentum type remedies in traditional deals like liquidated damages or termination rights? You could agree a minimum velocity requirement in your Agile contract that sort of incentivizes the supplier to maintain that momentum and use that as a proxy for some of the kind of lateness remedies we traditionally see. Another example is other kind of artifacts in Agile you'll often see, like a minimum viable product description or a definition of done. You know, those are sort of definitional documents that could be a proxy for the viability of what's being provided, or like a baseline quality or minimum set of requirements that need to be implemented. A little bit like, say, acceptance criteria. So, you know, the thing, the project isn't complete until what's been delivered meets those definitions. If you can work that into your contract, you know, you avoid being totally open-ended about what completion means, and you have some, you know, incentive or tool to govern what good performance looks like.
Sure. So it's about the shift in focus. So it's not simply saying, oh, here are the contractual tools, we're going to apply them in the same way. It's sort of working with Agile and baking in those Agile tools into the contract itself in a way that works for the teams on the ground. And how about managing issues that arise or that may arise during the lifespan of a particular project?
Yeah, that's a good question as well, because after you've sort of signed in the dotted line, this thing's got to be delivered. And some of the disputes and issues we've seen, as you've alluded to before, are around people maybe not ever looking at the contract or not operating the delivery in a way that is aligned with the contract. So I would sort of say, you know, follow the process. If you do what we sort of talked about and reflected an agile process that will actually work and has been bought into by the product teams, then follow it. Because if you don't and things go wrong, well, the courts don't look too kindly on either party if they think that they've not followed what was an agreed contractual process. And actually, even if you're sort of the wronged party or you think that, you know, you should have received something and someone's not played their part, the contribution you might have made to not following the process also, you know, you could end up with, you know, not much of a victory in the event of a dispute. Another tip I'd sort of say would, you know, manage changes in an agile way, you know, as distinct from more formal change control. You know, if you have an agile change process, which reflects how the reprioritization and the constant reassessment of what the priorities are, then, you know, it helps you kind of tackle things early and within the width of the agile commercial deals. So if you have a way to swap in and out requirements or change the order of how you do things, well, try and agree that in a way that actually still means the commercial construct in terms of the price and scope still stacks up and isn't broken. Not everything has to be, you know, avoid kind of accumulating all the little changes that need to arise over time, which, you know, cumulatively kind of break the kind of agile commercial model, and then you require some sort of renegotiation in, or there's some sort of dispute about, you know, how different requirements now sort of look.
Yeah.
My last tip here around managing things is manage that tension around scope, because it's easier said than done, but some of the issues we've seen are there's a dispute around breadth versus depth. So you could say, well, in our user stories or in our backlog, we asked for these high level requirements, which of course during a sprint process needed to be drilled down to more specific requirements. But if you don't set the right parameters of that up front, it's open to a vendor to sort of say, look, these are broader and different requirements to what we contracted for. We didn't budget for this amount of resource or effort to deliver those. So constructing the backlog and the user stories in a way that anticipates there's going to be detailed requirements developed during sprints in some way can help kind of fend off those issues around scope and breadth and depth. And the final thing I'll sort of mention is quite often with an outsourcing or traditional deal, people do sort of think about the end-to-end implementation of what's being produced. So, for example, you know, at the end of, you know, as a condition of go live, doing systems integration testing and user acceptance testing, quite often we see those kind of forgotten about in Agile, where it's about developing code to meet some functionality. But once you've got that, you've got your product, what do you do with it? It's got to be implemented into a wider business and IT environment. So don't forget that element of it. Whether it's the same supplier or not, or whether you're doing it in-house, think about integration, what everything you need to actually go live with this thing so you can actually realize those transformational benefits. That really needs to be thought through. Whether that's a separate sprint cycle, that's called integration or UAT, it's sometimes lacking, and then you end up with this kind of black box product that's all nice and could deliver the functionality, but isn't wired into the business environment in that way. And I think with Agile, sometimes we kind of can easily forget that.
Yeah, so it's about really thinking about things holistically in that sense. Well, Vic, thank you for that high level overview of some of the strategic points to think about when deciding to engage on an Agile project. It's been really great to have you on. In the next episode, we'll be doing a deeper dive into Agile contracting. Stay tuned, you won't want to miss it. We hope you enjoyed listening to this episode. If so, please subscribe, download, and share this podcast. We'd love to hear your thoughts. If you have any topic suggestions or general feedback on this or possible future episodes, send your thoughts to us at theroadmap@bristows.com. That's theroadmap@bristows.com. Alternatively, use the hashtag #TheRoadmapPod. Thanks for listening, and listen out for part 2.